Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, we had a very, very, very exciting week this week. We have stayed focused on some of the main issues that we have around the community and standing firm with what is right. The right thing is to do is to take care of the community and the people that live in the community, regardless what happened. We had a bus to fall into a sinkhole created by the city of Benton Harbor failing to take care of the problem of the water. We had a busted water main that ran for 2 years in this area, and nobody went out to fix the water main. Nobody even talked about it in the city. Because most things that don't concern you directly, you think it don't, you do not want to do anything. You're not going to say anything. That's typical. But it's unfortunate that we think on that level. The sinkhole was created because the failure of the city to do its job, and a bus full of school children fell into the sinkhole. They said, and the people in the community, rather than acknowledging that the elected officials have failed us once again, making excuses. One, they did not know that the streets would fall in if the water ran for 2 years continuously. The city officials could not have known that it would create a sinkhole in the middle of the street by allowing the water to run for 2 years and saying nothing. How stupid can people be? What is so difficult about cutting this water off in the first place? If you see a hole, a pipe busted in the streets, go out and cut the water off in that area. It's simple. Why would a water main have to run for 2 years? I'm telling you, 2 years. Flooded the community continuously. And not a single person spoke up. There was one. Naomi Valentine, she did. She came to me and told me what was happening. We sent out the correct department to go out and repair, and they didn't want to do it. And we had to force them to fix it less than 3 months ago. Now, remember this. It had ran for 2 years. And finally got somebody out there to repair that water main. Wow, amazing. We cry about everything, but we don't want to do nothing. We sit around and joke, listen to that rap music, and we believe it's okay. We believe what we're doing, this is the way we think, unfortunately. It's time that we step to the plate. It's time that we force the elected officials to do what is right for the people. We have this mayor who claims he's for all the people. No, he's not for the black community. He's a black guy. His name is Marcus Muhammad. We picked him up and put him in office, and he had turned his back on the people. Matter of fact, we had money available. He wants to fix or repair or build up the streets in the white community, the roads that Whirlpool use every day. But there's nothing wrong with these roads that they use. Matter of fact, the state came in and rebuilt them less than 3 years ago. But now they want to take the money we have to go out and redo these roads that just been redone and leave the roads that have not been done or redone in 25 years. They don't want to repair. We live in a world that that we have to sit back and say, wait a minute, you know, we got to do what we're supposed to do. I don't know. I can't say that if we recall, well, we can get him in November, replace this mayor, but who are we going to put in there? It's the same thing over and over and over again. Same situation. You know, I myself, you know, am thinking about how much energy we put into putting a guy in the office, and as soon as he get in the office, he flip, start working for the corporations rather than for the people. And the funny part about this thing, most of the people think it's okay. That's if they know. It's all right. It's all right to take advantage of the community. It's all right to take advantage of the people that live in the community. It's all right. They'll never know anyway what hit them. Let somebody tell them. But that's my job to tell you. My job is to tell you that you're getting it. You have put people in office, and you know this, and they're destroying our community. A whole city school bus fell in a sinkhole. The whole bus. And one lady said, oh, it's not the mayor's fault. Well, whose fault is it? Whose fault is it that they didn't cut the water off for 2 years and let the water run? That's his job, to save money for the people. Run your water for 2 years without cutting it off and see how much it costs you. Run your water. Run your water for a day. All day. See how much it costs you. We always find excuses for other black people that's doing us wrong. We find an excuse. And have now put up in a compromising position. We got to change the way we do business. We got to change the way things are. We have to stand up and learn to fight back. It's going to get worse before it get better. Until we get out here and do what we have to do. Sometimes you have to make the supreme sacrifice. Yourself. You have to get out there and show them that you're not intimidated by this. And the shameful part about it, you should hear some of the comments on Facebook that these people are making. I cannot sit here and believe that these people are saying what they're saying. Like it's okay for a whole school bus to end up in a sinkhole. What if the children would have got killed? One child would have got killed, not 20, 30. What if 30 would have got killed? It's okay. What kind of thinking is that? We're destroying our minds. We better get it together. We better change the way we do business. It's time that we take this thing to a whole different level. Because any time, and you have witnessed some of them yellow buses. They're big. They're big. But anytime a whole bus can go into a hole, and only thing, and basically you could say, you better thank God that none of the children got hurt. Because you know there's no seatbelts on the bus. that's in the black community that I know of. Maybe they have changed that law or put a law on the fact that, you know, you have to have seatbelts on these buses. But I have not witnessed any. And it amazed me how, well, we got to do something about it, and we got to do something about it right away. We got to change the mindset of our community, the whole community. It's not just one or two people. I'm talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, you see. But they don't know no better because it doesn't affect them. When it don't affect you, you don't care. But you should care. We should care about each other. If it's happening to you, it is happening to me. And one last thing before I bring in my first guest, which is important. We have what we call a water crisis here in Benton Harbor in the state of Michigan, Flint, Michigan, Detroit, Michigan. I was at the Water Conference where they gave out awards to people on yesterday. Some of my favorite people was there. You know, Marion Kramer, she was there. They gave her an award for her work. They gave Monica Patrick an award for her work. Just several people. One of the Flint Water Warriors, they gave her an award. And it was just an amazing situation, just watching people who actually put their lives out on the front line to receive a award. I myself, I'm one of them guys who really, really don't believe in these awards. I believe that, you know, that, you know, you have to get out there and do what needs to be done and do it because it's the right thing to do. Our level of concentration should be on doing the right thing. Do the right thing. To me, it's such a simple thing. Do the right thing. Go out there and do what is right. And regardless, people are going to criticize you one way or the other, but that's okay. It comes with the territory. You have to get out there and make sure you take care of your business. On that note, I'm going to bring in my good friend, Joseph Perry, one of the greatest young men that you would ever know. And, you know, a young man, when he speaks, everybody listens. Very talented. Very, very know what he's talking about. He's the type of guy who I love as my friend, my good friend. And I'm just happy to have him on my show. Joseph Perry, are you there?
Yes, Reverend, I'm here.
All right. How you doing today?
I'm doing fine, and I want to say it's always a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you for having me today.
Oh, it's an honor to have a man of your caliber on my show because it takes the show to a whole new level. And I really, really appreciate you. Strong fighter, tough guy. And here's the good news. You make sense. You see, a lot of times people just don't make sense. You do. And I love it. I love that thought. But what I want to talk about today is last week we talked about the 10-2 law. I want you to take us through this 10-2 law because people, they don't really get it. They think that, the law does not say that that only two blacks can be on the jury. But you tell us where you want to take us to and how far you want to take us.
Okay, maybe I'd give just a little bit of some history to it. Basically, it goes all the way back, believe it or not, to slavery and the passing of the 13th Amendment, which got passed in January of 1865. And, you know, I was taught in school as a kid that the 13th Amendment ended slavery, but all anybody has to do is read the 13th Amendment, and it shows you that it didn't end slavery. It just changed slavery, because what it said is it said that there won't be any slavery or involuntary servitude, you know, anymore unless you're convicted of a crime and sent to jail by a judge. Then you're subject to slavery. I dare say that prior to that, there were no black folks in jail. Black folks was out on the plantation, you know, picking cotton. But the second that it shifted, all the 13th Amendment did was shift slavery from the plantation to the penitentiary. And from that day forth, black folks in large numbers disproportionately in the penitentiary. And so what happened was after Reconstruction, because during Reconstruction there were blacks serving on juries. There were blacks that were running for legislative positions. Well, after the defeat of Reconstruction in the state of Louisiana, they started tinkering with the idea. The whole idea that they wanted to do was limit the number of blacks on a jury, and then a lot of people don't realize, but part of the way of doing that is if you say that you've got, and it originally was a 9-3 law, not a 10-2 law, but if you're able to say, okay, nine people are all that's required to convict, and the law states it, it's only in cases where the penalty is going to be hard labor like slavery, right? So in cases where the crime you've committed, the punishment is hard labor, we're going to make sure you're locked up. How are we going to do that? With a 9-3 unanimous decision jury law, which means that now in order to have an all-white jury, it doesn't matter if there's two or three blacks on that jury. You've got an all-white jury because you only need nine votes. And so whereas in the rest of the country, like say in Chicago to this very day, a black kid getting in trouble on the west side of Chicago, south side, they send him out to the suburbs for an all-white jury. I don't understand how they do it, but they're doing it. Ben Harvard, they give you an all-white jury, right, all 12. Well, in Louisiana, up until they voted this law out, that wasn't what was required. What was required in order to have an all-white jury was 10 out of 12. And so the way that the law got really enacted into the Constitution was finally in 1898, they held a Constitutional Convention. And these folks that were over that Constitutional Convention were so proud of themselves that they even stated, and let me quote to you what they said. They said that they did their job by making the state of Louisiana ensure the supremacy of the white race to the extent that it could be constitutionally and legally done. And that law went on until, as 9-3, until 1973, when the state of Louisiana held another constitutional convention, and because it was a law, the Supreme Court made a decision that you couldn't have 9-3, but you could have 10-2. And just for the states, not for the federal. And so that any state that wants to, they could pass a 10-2 law. Okay, so from 1973 until just last year, when the voters voted out unanimously, get rid of this law, overwhelmingly voted it out, you know, now 10-2 is gone. Okay, so that's sort of the history of it.
Wow, you know, and that's amazing when you sit down and think about it. I know that when I went to trial, I had three trials, and three of them. I had two blacks on one trial, and it ended in a hung jury because it took 12 to convict you. The other two trials I had was all white. There wasn't a black person in sight. And matter of fact, more or less in my case, the prosecutor didn't have to kick black people off the jury. They ran off. We had a chance for one guy, he was a preacher, to be on the jury. And he claimed that he talked to me all the time. That was the biggest lie a person could ever tell. I hadn't spoken to that guy in years. Really didn't even know his name. And yet and still, he get up there and lied, talking about we talk all the time. But black people also have to take a stand, Joe. They cannot go in there with the intention of not being on the jury, because your time is coming too, whether you like it or not. I know this feel of how people, oh, I don't want to go in there and convict nobody. Well, no, just follow the rules. If it's correct, if a person have actually committed the crime, you have an obligation to yourself to convict that person. And, all you're doing is following your heart. And this is what we have to get through our heads, Joe. I remember once this guy, this last trial I had, this young man said that he spoke to me at church 25 years ago. 25 years ago. Have you spoke to him since then? No. So that gave them a reason to exclude him. Never heard of it before. Because they didn't want black people on the jury, and black people didn't want to be on the jury, which is so amazing. I think that you should just stand up for what's right and let the chips fall where it's may. And it is what it is. You know, I go to the courthouse, and when I go over there, I see all these all-white juries. And Benton, I remember Ben Harvey is about 94% African-American. But yet and still, you get all-white juries. And guess what? You get convicted, too.
They yes, you do.
They don't need evidence, Joe, to convict you. You know, especially if there's a majority is them. This is what they do. This is what they look for. And then they go home and eat like it ain't nothing, you know. See, one of the things I learned from this Trump administration that these folks don't mind lying. See, what we got to do, we got to find people willing to tell the truth, because we haven't found nobody yet that's willing to tell the truth. I mean, the lies just keep piling up and piling up and piling up, and I'm happy to go to the courthouse, because I usually go there. When I go there on Mondays, I always tell people that, you know, Trump is on the run. He said, you'll never take me alive. And that's my message to them. So let them know that the man is alive. I said, you know, he's going to be pulling up here with a bus. He's going to need a couple of people to go with him. Will y'all go? And, you know, I get a good laugh out of that. But, you know, in reality, what I'm doing, I'm letting them know it's time for you people to start telling the truth, Joe. And that's the thing. And you know, we was talking, and you was telling me about how a member of your family and stuff like how that worked. And you know, it's not just here in Chicago. It's not just here in Benton Harbor. It's not just in Louisiana. It's really around the country. You see?
That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point, because what they did. Let me just say this. Okay, once they passed that 13th Amendment, it meant slavery wasn't just in the South anymore. It was all over the country. That was one. Number two, that slavery is driven about criminalization. So, you know, that means now this whole thing about blacks and crime that's going on for the last couple hundred years. I mean, you can see, and this is one last part that people don't see, nobody gets, right? Is that it also changed the slave master from that plantation slave master to Wall Street corporations. Because the companies that are currently using penitentiary labor, penal labor, and making super profits, where they go all the way from paying people zero money to maybe 50 cents an hour is the highest I've heard yet, right? Still slave wages, right? Okay, McDonald's, Wendy's, Intel, Victoria's Secret, United Airlines, American. Look, there's a whole lot of these corporations that are making profits off of this slavery. You think they're going to let go of that? That's what you're up against. And they'll tell every lie in the book, just like Trump is telling, right? They're going to tell every lie needed for them to continue to make them super profits. And I would say this to the whites, you know, who are caught up in this, right? It isn't just blacks that are enslaved in these penitentiaries. It don't matter what color you are. You're enslaved in them penitentiaries. You know, and so it's a way, I would put it like this, that if you want to get rid of racism, you're going to have to get rid of slavery. That racism comes from slavery, and slavery is still going on in America. That's a good place to start. You know, and I think that people need to learn from what history has given us. History has told us, for instance, that if you don't learn from it, you're going to suffer. It's going to come back and bite you in the butt, right? Those that don't learn from history are going to suffer because of that, right? And
absolutely,
it's just like in Germany. It's just like that guy in Germany that said, well, first they came for the Jew, then they came for this and the that, and by the time they come for me, there was nobody left. That's what we got going on in America right now. You know, first they came for the black, the Muslim, you know, the Latino, you know, the immigrant, right? But guess what? They ain't in there. You know, white folks is in bad shape in America at the lower end, who are poor, working class white folks, and it's only this racial stuff that keeps it going. And let me just say this. Class sort of takes a second or a backseat to race in America. Why? Because, man, this year makes 400 years since slavery has been in America. This year, 1619 to 2019. These slave masters have had all that time to perfect their craft, right? They have perfected this thing of slavery, right? And so race is how America does class. This is what they've learned. And, man, it's their winning strategy, and it's what's been able to keep them on top of the world and rich for generations. I would say this. If you want it to end, it starts down in New Orleans on March 16th through the 18th, where there's going to be this Supreme Court hearing. I urge everybody who can to get in touch with myself. I'll give my phone number, 312-788-0380. Again, 312-788-0380. And also you can get in contact with Belinda Brown, and I'm sure she'll give her information. You can get that out. But I would urge everybody who can to either get down to New Orleans or at least spread the word about this, get the word out, because it might start in Louisiana, but this is a nationwide fight.
And you know what, then I agree with you 100%. And the key is we stand together. There's strength in numbers. And those of you who don't know that, it's like a secret weapon, because people don't know the more people you have out here shouting that something is wrong, the better it is for the people. Sometimes you have to put yourself out there to help other people. And you must be willing to suffer the consequences, whatever that may be. But it's the right thing to do. My thing is that, Joe, I got to confess that we have to learn to figure out a way to get people to understand how important it is to stand up to evil and wickedness. You see, that's one thing we don't do. We'll run for cover. We'll run for the wagons. I remember when the word got out that, you know, they had sent a SWAT team to my home, and people was running for cover. People was hiding under rocks. They was hiding under the bridge. They were just hiding because they figured that just by knowing me that they was going to come get them too. All kind of stuff was going on. But we have to make sure that we're doing what we supposed to do, Joe. It's crucial that we stand together. And here's the thing, this New Orleans thing, we got people that's coming together that's never been together before. I was talking to a guy in Florida, Bruce Wright, Reverend Bruce Wright, and he was telling me, he said he just wish he can come. He said, but he's going to rally the troops to get people to understand to stand with us on the 18th. He said, we may not be in that courtroom, but we'll be standing right here in Florida, and then also in Alabama. One of the guys, he's an attorney, Anthony Moore, who also will be standing with us. And even as far as Mississippi, we're getting the southern states, but the northern states have to join hands too and fight this monster. We have to learn to stop listening to all that rap music and stuff like that and stand up for the future of our children and our children's children, because it starts right now. It starts right now. At the time that's on your watch right now, that's what time it is. It's time that we stop sitting around here twiddling our thumbs, saying that everything is going to be all right, because it's not going to be all right unless we make it all right. If we can't take it, we're not going to get it. You know, face the facts. You can only get if these people are afraid that you could take it. If they don't think you can take it, they're not going to give it to you. And they got layers how they do things nowadays. It's layers, you know. And let me give you an example. Like the you have in your community, like here in Benton Harbor, we have the Benton Harbor Police. Then you have the Sheriff Department. Then you have the State Police, and then you have the Reserves. Then you have the United States Army. See, there are layers. See, and they're prepared, but we have to show them that we are strong in numbers. And on that note, Joe, I'm going to end it right there, but I want you to give out your number again. And if people want to call you and talk to you about this, I know you're willing to listen and give them an explanation. And that's you. That's your talent. It's which is one of the greatest talents that a person can have. And I really, really appreciate you. I appreciate you coming on the show and talking about this 10-2 because it's crucial that we understand how important it is. On that note, I want you to tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Okay, yeah, you can reach me at – I'm going to give my phone number and I'm going to give my email number. My phone number is 312-788-0380. Again, 312-788-0380, and my email address is Joseph Peery, that's spelled JosephPeery, Joseph Peery at gmail.com. And let me caution everybody wants to make it Perry. It's not Perry, it's Peery, Joseph Peery at gmail.com.
Thank you so much, Joseph Peery. And I just want to let you know how much we love you and appreciate you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And listen, we're going to get a chance to talk soon. So let's continue to do this work and make things happen. On that note, I'm going to have to say goodbye to you and bring in my good friend, Belinda Brown, the one and only. There's only one Belinda Brown in the whole nation. You know, we're talking 350 million people here in the United States, but there's only one Belinda Brown. And if you ask me again, I knock you down. That's my friend Belinda Brown. Talk to me, Belinda Brown. Are you there?
Yes, Pastor Pinckney, I'm here, and it's going down. It's going down. You know, home here in Louisiana, I have to use Belinda Parker Brown, so that's what everybody know me by is Belinda Parker Brown. But, yes, I'm here. I'm enjoying the show. I really, really appreciate Joe for coming on and giving out his information and making it himself available for people to call and contact him so that he can educate them and basically inform them about this movement that's taking place here in Louisiana.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's just so amazing. And I have been on several radio shows. I was in Detroit on yesterday telling people about this 10-2 and explaining it to them to the best of my knowledge, and letting them know exactly where we at and what we need to do to move forward. Because I was with Mary Kramer and Monica Patrick on yesterday. We had a tremendous time. And I just want to say that nobody could believe that there's such a situation going on today. Not in Louisiana, you know. People say, "Well, oh, no, that don't happen. They can't do that." Well, they can do whatever they want to do, Belinda, if we don't stand up and say something wrong with it. So that's how I feel. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Pastor Pinckney, you are absolutely right. But you know, I know Joe said that, you know, it may not. You know, I think you mentioned that it's happening all over the world. But I believe, Pastor Pinckney, and I know for a fact that it's going to start here in Louisiana. That's why people are coming from all over right now. We got people coming from Los Angeles. You know, you yourself is coming from Michigan, and you bring in people with you. Joe is going to be here from Chicago, Illinois. People are coming from New York. You know, I have gotten calls from Ghana, you know, Cancun, Ohio. You know, people are coming from all over, especially from our one of closest right here, Atlanta, Georgia, Florida, Texas, next door to us here in Louisiana, Mississippi. The people are going to come out and support and stand with us, Pastor Pinckney, because of the fact that Louisiana took the lead in the high, in the most incarceration place in the world. They incarcerated more people than anywhere else in the world. And, you know, and they made a mockery of Angola. And I, you know, I want to say that because, you know, I spent all day Friday, me and my husband and a friend, we went to see Mr. Victor on Friday in Angola. And we spent most of the day there. And some of the things that we saw there was just amazing. They got their own credit union. They have over 1 million acres where they have their fire department. They got their own little city set up out there up on the prisons, Pastor Pinckney. You would have to see it for yourself to believe it, okay? But, you know, they made a mockery of it because whenever people would cry out and say that they wanted to go back home, you know, during the slavery time, they would cry out, you know, when they were in chains and being shackled and, you know, just raped and, I mean, raped and beat here, you know, because of the slave masters, how they were being abused. And they would cry out and say, you know, I want to go home. I want to go home. So, you know, most of the people, you know, when they were being transported from Africa, there was a continent in that was called Angola. I want to make sure I get it right. But anyhow, it was so when they said that they cry out and want to go back home, they created that's why they named this prison Angola, which was known as the bloodiest prison in America. Okay, so people need to know that. And, you know, when I go out there and I look at, you know, how these people have set this prison up, it is big money, Pastor Pinckney. You know, they got their own credit union. When I say their own credit union, they got millions of dollars that are going through that credit union because the inmates out there are working on those plantations and making pennies a day. Okay. And one thing that I really admire about Mr. Victor, he refused to work. but you know, I'm telling you, it starts here in Louisiana, and I'm excited about what's happening here right now and how, you know, everything is coming together. I just got off the phone with Pastor Anthony Evans, that heads up the National Black Church Initiative for, you know, out of Washington, D.C. He's 100% on board, thanks to you, Pastor Pinckney, reaching out to him and letting him know about, you know, how crucial and how critical it is for him to come down here and stand with us and support this movement, you know, because this is big. It's really, really big. And I can't share everything on the phone because there's so much to talk about, all the things that are surrounding this, you know, how the young people are, you know, we're going to try to get some of the college students that, you know, we got several universities here in Louisiana, SUNY University, Xavier University. You know, these people are going to be standing with us. They're going to come out and they're going to support and rally for the listen, everybody, this is what the people need to know. We're saying that unanimous is not enough. Pastor Pinckney, I'm telling you, we're ready for you to come down here. We already got you lined up to speak at several places. We got you lined up to go on one of the most famous radio shows here in New Orleans. It's called WBOK. It's 12:30 a.m. You know, people can't dial it up from there, but it's a famous radio station where, you know, a lot of the famous artists and, you know, Louis Armstrong and all these famous people, the Neville brothers and all these people has been on this station. So you're going to get to go into this station, Pastor Pinckney, and we're going to tell the people here in Louisiana what they really need to know about the purpose and the goals that we intend to accomplish in this rally.
Amen. Listen, you and your husband, my good friend, my brother Carl Brown himself, y'all went to Angola and y'all sit down. Did you sit down with Mr. Victor and talk with him personally?
Yes, we did. We sat there, we ate, we broke bread with Mr. Victor, we prayed, we took pictures.
Wait, slow down. Are you telling me that you ate the prison food?
Yeah, Pastor Pinckney, you know, you already know how picky I am about that.
Yeah.
It wasn't no butt naked fish, that's for sure.
Well, thank God that we had a nice
You're going to have to tell that joke about the butt naked fish. And you already know I was watching everything, every move I make, and they was watching us too, Pastor Pinckney. It was very little that we can do, but we had a very effective meeting with Mr. Victor. We sat there for over 4 hours, just going back and forth over some documents and information. And what I was really excited about is that he have over 900, 916 inmates that have signed on to this campaign and their family members. So, you know, when I say I'm just counting the inmates, but their family members that are on the outside that they're contacting and writing letters to come and stand with us and support us. He also mentioned some motorcycle organization. I wrote it down. I don't have it in front of me. But he said that, you know, they come in droves and, you know, and that they're, you know, supporting us and standing with us, too, as well. So.
Very good, very good. I'm hoping that on that day in that courthouse that the motorcycle group will come, and I'm an eyewitness to how they operate. If they just came and drove around in circles, that would be a fantastic statement to give out, because the biggest thing that's going to happen here is that, you know, we're making a statement to them and showing them that we can stand up to them. And I just believe this, Belinda, there's strength in numbers. If people just stood up and said no more, unanimous is not enough, and everybody is saying the same thing on the same page, we can defeat.
Right.
We can do something that we can do, Belinda, because I know Mr. Victor is ready to come home.
You know, Pastor Pinckney, I don't know how much time I have, but I want to share, you know, Mr. Victor, you know, he have been in there for 4 years now, and I think he have came to, you know, grips and the reality that, you know, it was God's plan for him to go there, you know, and, you know, that's hard to accept, and it's really hard to swallow, but the fact of the matter is that Mr. Victor have done a fabulous job. I mean, a awesome job with organizing those men there in the prison, and also doing call outs where he's having over thousands of inmates showing up where they have to literally, the guards have to come in and shut down and lock the doors because nobody else can come in. He have baptized. He said that the warden called them in, you know, how they kind of call you in and put you in check. And I know you had a lot of tremendous things that happened when you were in prison too, but he said he was baptizing, Muslims and, you know, people with all types of, you know, denominational and, you know, religious, backgrounds and stuff. And he was doing things that was totally unheard of. And the warden was concerned about it because because he thought maybe that, you know, Mr. Victor was, you know, putting some type of spell on these people or something. But it came out that these people were just, they was just amazed with how this man would flow. And I really truly believe that he is, you know, being used mightily of God in that prison because of the fact that, you know, some of the things that he showed me, the materials from some of the people that he have helped already to be released. You know, Mr. Victor, you know, he was his own lawyer in his trial. And he have, you know, God have tremendously gifted this man to understand and interpretate the law in a way where it's just totally unheard of. Just sitting there listening to him and the wisdom that he have grown and to know these things, it's almost, you know, you would have to see it to believe it.
Wow, that is really, really amazing. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing Mr. Victor, and we're going to make sure that we do all we can to make sure that this happened for him, because, you know, it's amazing. I remember when I was in prison and they brought me back to Benton Harbor, St. Joseph, Michigan, and they had to stop off and wait for all the extra enforcement to come and surround our van. And like, I'm in there for voter fraud, and they got 5-6 cars following the prison van in the big house. And the first thing the correctional officer said, "Who are you?" He said, "Who are you?" He said, "I never seen nothing like this." He said, "Even murderers don't get this." They told them to wait at the truck stop for the trolley of cars to come and take me in and sneak. And like, how you gonna sneak somebody in? You got 6 police cars and you got a van, and they following in front of the van and behind the van, and he's telling them that they just sneak me in through the back. How you gonna sneak me in through the back and everybody watching? And I said, "Man, that's amazing grace."
Well, you know, one of the great things, Pastor Pinckney, about Mr. Victor, and I can go on and on talking about this man because, you know, I know that, you know, his story and the things that happened to him, how he tracked everything, how he documented everything, how all the inconsistencies and all the laws that they broke and how they was caught in their own criminal acts. You know, Mr. Victor have documented every single thing. You know, I'm like, who in their right mind could just go through all that he went through and be able to document all this stuff line up on line? That I'm going to tell you, that right there alone is just, oh my God, that is some powerful, powerful information that this man has. And that's another reason why I believe that Louisiana is going to take the lead and that is taking the lead. And everybody is going to come and stand with us, Pastor Pinckney, is because the story that is behind Mr. Victor, you know, and that is going to merit the opportunity for so many people to be set free. Okay,
amen.
This man have the documents. He got the information. He got everything that we need. And, you know, I was talking to Sister Empress, and we was talking about how, we charge genocide and how, you know, as you know, as black people, we've been marginalized. And see, in the state of Louisiana, we got over 80% of African and black men, black people that are incarcerated. Okay.
Mm.
That right there alone is just blatant discrimination. Okay. Because,
absolutely,
you know, I don't know the actual percentage of our population here, but that is just too many black people to be locked up in one place, Pastor Pinckney.
And I agree 100%. And that's for sure. But listen, I want you to tell people how, you know, where to come, what to do, and also when you get off the line today, I want you to call Ralph, and because
okay.
they They want Betty needs to talk to us. They're trying to make plans. Chairman O'Malley is coming from Black is Back. He's a very close friend of mine, and he want to make sure he be part of that. I got some more folks coming from all over, and we're going to what we want to do is make sure that we have people there who can spread the word. See, that's more important than if people come, that's fine. But if you come and don't spread the word, then you know once again, there's only one person. The key word is spread the word, and if we can spread it, Belinda, we can win this battle. But listen, I need you to tell us exactly where you want them to be, and. And if they come in on a Saturday, what you want them to do? Because that's crucial also. Our goal is to have the meeting inside New Orleans. So let's see where we go from here. You tell us because you're leading this charge, so you go.
I appreciate that, Pastor Pinckney, but we have been, this is a tedious work, and we have been bombarded with quite a few challenges. The most important thing right now, we should have our itinerary authenticated by Monday or Tuesday of next week. So I'm going to be sending that out to everybody that I know that are coming, especially from out of town. The first thing that is on the plan I know for a fact that you're going to arrive on the 14th, and that is a Thursday. We're going to bring you to Slidell because Thursday night we got a community meeting that you're going to be a surprise guest at. And then that Friday morning at 7:30 in the morning, we're scheduled to go on WBOK radio. That's going to spread the word because then that way all the listeners that are there in the city of New Orleans and around and about that pick up that channel are going to, hear us. The other thing is on that Saturday, which is March the 16th, this is the big day, March the 16th, okay, is going to be the rally. Now, what Pastor Evans just told me on yesterday that he is in the process of securing one of the largest churches for us to hold that rally inside at Franklin Avenue, downtown New Orleans, and the people that are flying in on Saturday can go straight to the church. So I'm going to send that information out with the church address and everything in it. On Sunday, we're going to be in another large church, which is in New Orleans East, hopefully, that is still a tentative, that we're planning to do a big fundraiser at that church to help, support the movement and help us with resources. The other thing, then we're going back to after that Sunday, we're going to go to La Paz. We're going to leave New Orleans, have dinner or whatever, go to La Paz, and then we're going to spend the night in La Paz and get up that Monday morning to pack the courthouse and also hopefully rally on the outside of the courthouse and get as much social media as we possibly can for the trial that's going to take place that Monday, Monday the 18th at the courthouse. Okay, but one of the things that I want everybody to know that we are having a challenge with trying to book hotels and Airbnbs for people that want to group up and stay together. I have secured hotels in Slidell for you. You're taken care of, Ralph and Pastor Evans. Plan to stay in New Orleans, that those hotels have been secured. So what we're hoping that since this is the Mardi Gras season, Fat Tuesday would be the last day, which is March the 5th of the Mardi Gras season, and then hopefully we can get some things opening up. But it's so much going on in the month of March in Louisiana. It's a lot of exciting things, festivities and celebrations and stuff like that. So this is a really good time for people to come down. They can also almost make it like a mini vacation too, because there's so much to do and enjoy while you're here. But the main thing is getting down to business, and that is being at the rally on March the 16th and at the courthouse on March the 18th. Pastor Pinckney.
Yes, All right. Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. If they want to get in touch with you, is there a number that they can call you at?
Yes, I would love for everybody to call me. You can also go to my website. You know, the website that we have the campaign up and running on the website. You can also click and like it and support it. You can sign on as an individual supporter. That list is growing by leaps and bounds. That website is www.LAUnited.com. That stands for Louisiana United International. The other thing you can go to is my Facebook. You can like me or friend me on Facebook at Belinda Parker Brown. Belinda Parker Brown. And that would connect you with my Twitter and all the other social media outlets. My phone number, my cell phone number, my office number, you can call me at either one. I got people taking calls for me. If you miss a call, please don't take it personal. Don't hesitate. Keep calling until you get me. That's very important because I am busy. But the phone number for my office is 985-503-0626. That's 985-503-0626. And my cell phone number is error code 269. That's a Michigan error code. Don't let it throw you out, Pastor Pinkney. No, it's 269-369-4751. You can call me. That's my personal cell phone number. And I really would appreciate the patience of everybody just, you know, taking your time if you don't get me when you call me the first time.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Belinda, whatever you do, make sure you call Ralph and Betty. Chairman O'Malley will be waiting on Betty and Ralph to call them so that you can talk with them and tell them exactly what they need to do. Chairman O'Malley is a very, very, very powerful person, and we got him on our side. And we got his group on the side, and he's an international guy. So we got something big going there. So my level of concentration is to make sure that we're able to spread the word, even after the date that we're there in New Orleans. And we want to keep it moving so we can make it more of an international thing rather than just a national. Because if we make it international, it brings, put another feather into our hat to deal with, because this country and the rest of the world need to know about this. And I want to thank you.
Mm-hmm. I want to say one more thing, Pastor Pinkney. You know, we're going to need to talk because the lawyer was supposed to show up for Friday for Mr. Victor. He did not show up because the family had not been able to secure the money. You know, Mr. Victor's kids have been really stricken with a lot of poverty since both their parents was been in prison. They've been struggling. But and then, you know, I don't get paid for what I do. So my thing right now is that we really want that lawyer to be, you know, to be on board, because he really should have been there with me on Friday to visit with Mr. Victor. So I have reached back out to him. He do plan to go see Mr. Victor before the court date. So I just want to, you know, some kind of way we need to assure this man that, you know, he will be paid, and that, you know, we're counting on him to be there to represent Mr. Victor on the 18th.
Okay, well, you know, we want to make sure, because we need him to go forward just as a mouthpiece, because even though that Mr. Victor defended himself, most time if you try to defend yourself, they say you got a fool for a lawyer, and
right,
and that very seldom works, because they don't want to hear what you have to say. Even myself, I would never ever attempt to defend myself for any reason, even though
but,
I might
Pastor
know.
Pastor Pinckney, the problem is, I understand what you're saying, but the problem is that, you know, Louisiana, I'm going to tell you right now, they don't intend to get this right. And they threaten these lawyers here. And we didn't have it happen so many times in our organization. And what they do is put penalties and threaten them and all that kind of stuff and then go after them. And then what happens is that, you know, no matter, you know, attorneys, that is their lifeline. That's their lifeline. And they and the state of Louisiana knows that, okay? And they have taken attorneys' license away from them. They have jacked them up in all kinds of ways in the courtroom. And, you know, these are the type of, they threaten them. And that's what I'm concerned about, you know, because, you know, with Mr. Victor's case, we all know the story. They would not allow Mr. Victor to have an attorney to, no attorney would take his case. None.
And that's understandable. But what we want to do is that we got to make sure, that's why we got to make it international, and we got to start using this guy's name, so that way if he don't come and do the right thing, then his name will be mud the way we want it to be. So I think that we have to make sure that we're doing what we're supposed to do and continue to do what we need to do. And then we put it in God's hand. See, one of the things that was amazing to me, I put everything in God's hand. I didn't, you know, whatever decision God made was fine with me.
Right.
If that meant that I had to stay in prison, fine, you know. But I know that he had his hand in there, and I knew that he knew what he was doing. But listen, Belinda, we don't have any more time. I just want to thank you. And I do want you, I'm going to make sure that you call Ralph.
I will. I have so much more to say, Pastor Pinckney, but we're out of time, like you said. But thank you so much, and I really appreciate you, and I'm looking
and
forward to
it. Thank you so much, and I'm so glad. And thank Joe and Joe Perry, our band of his caliber. I didn't get a chance to get to my good friend, Big Yo, but Big Yo, we're on a mission right now, and I know you're on a mission too, but we're trying to make this thing happen. And listen, I want to thank everybody for being on the show. Thank you so much. And God bless you. God keep you. I'll see you.